So we are going to run through Joshua 4. If you've traveled at all, traveled in terms of driven a car across the state farm roads and back roads and highways of our country, you have probably seen in a number of places historical markers. You know, those little signs that say something happened here on this date or it's about some individual. Do you know that the state of Texas has the most historical markers of any state in the United States? There are 13,000 official Texas historical markers throughout the state. Every county has historical markers. And I've been tempted on occasion to stop and try to read some of those, but I'm on a way to go somewhere, and I knew that would just prolong the process of getting there. But you can ride right by all those historical markers, and they don't interrupt your trip. They don't change anything. You just know, oh yeah, there's another historical marker, and you keep on going. The Bible, however, has historical markers that are much more significant. Biblical historical markers are designed to create a memory that creates an action that leads to spiritual maturity and growth. Memory is crucial to our spiritual maturity. An elderly couple, a husband and a wife, were having trouble remembering things. I know this doesn't apply to anybody in this room. So they decided to go to their doctor and have it checked out. The doctor explained to them that they basically have too many things going on in their mind. And so when you have too much going on in your mind, you have problems remembering them all. So he suggested that they start writing things down so that they could remember where they were going and what it was they were going to do. Later that night, while the husband and wife were sitting in the living room watching television, the man got out of his chair and started toward the kitchen. And his wife said, "Where are you going?" Well, he said, "I'm going to the kitchen to get some ice cream." Well, she said, "Will you get a bowl for me as well? And you better write that down because I know you're not going to remember." And he said, "I know I can remember to get a bowl of ice cream for you and a bowl of ice cream for me." And she said, "Well, I want strawberries on my ice cream. So you better write that down, otherwise you'll forget." He said, "No, I'm pretty sure I can remember to put the strawberries on the ice cream." "Well, I also want whipped cream on top of my strawberries, so you had better write this down." Now, he's getting pretty irritated at this particular point, as you can imagine. But in a nicest way possible, he said, "Not to worry, I can remember." Well, about 20 minutes later, he returns. And he enters with a plate of bacon and eggs. And he gives it to her. And she stares at it for a moment. And she said, "I knew you were going to mess it up. You forgot the toast." So how's your memory? Because all of that brings us to Joshua chapter 4. Joshua chapter 4 is often entitled something along the line of Stones of Remembrance. We could also entitle it Lest We Forget. Because Joshua 4 focuses on the memorial that the Israelites set up after crossing the Jordan River, the purpose of which is clearly stated at least twice in the chapter, was to enable future generations to remember the amazing things that God had done. And what we discover is that if there is no memorial, then we all forget. And if we forget, we tend to act faithlessly or recklessly.
Can you find it today?
Can I find it? No.
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 Can an archaeologist
find it? Well, probably. All we know for sure is when Joshua writes and the book is written, they're there at the day of the writing of the book, is all it's stated. As a matter of fact, you're not even sure exactly where Gilgal is specifically, because there are a number of tells that say that this is the tell in relationship to Gilgal, this is it. There's not a specific historical site like going to Jerusalem or going to the Mount of Olives. It's a little more spread out from that. What you discover scripturally is God has often set up memorials or reminders. What's the classic reminder for the Jewish nation? Passover. Now, here's this reminder that every year when you celebrate this feast, you're going to remember that I passed over your home because the blood was sprinkled upon the doorposts and the mantle. And therefore, I have rescued you and delivered you out of the land of Egypt. It's a memorial feast of remembrance so that the nation of Israel, the individual celebrating the feast, would be faithful to the God who had rescued them. It's not just a memorial to say, oh, isn't this a nice idea so that we can have another Passover meal? It's designed to produce an action of faithfulness to God for his provision. There are a number of those throughout the Old Testament, and you'll have to take the time to read those from the notes, and I think I gave you references to those as well. Joshua chapter 4. The nation of Israel has finished crossing the Jordan, and the Lord speaks to Joshua. You remember from last week, as we looked at the fact that the waters were separated by as much as 27 miles, and they're on dry ground as these 1.5 to 2 million people cross over into God's promised land to his nation. God is keeping his covenant promises. And the Lord speaks to Joshua and reminds him of something that he had said in chapter 3. Take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from each tribe. Now, if you remember from chapter 3 and verse 12, God had given Joshua the same command, pick one leader from each tribe, but he didn't tell him what the task was. He just said, pick one. Here we discover what their task is going to be. Here's their assignment. Command them, saying, take up for yourselves 12 stones from here out of the middle of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet are standing firm, and carry them over with you and lay them down in the lodging place where you will lodge tonight. So Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the sons of Israel, one man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, cross again to the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan, and each of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. So you get the picture. Each one of these leaders is now given the task of going back into the river. I think it took a lot of faith for them to go back into the river. They were incredibly grateful to have crossed on dry ground. But now you want me to go back? But remember, the priests are still there. They're standing, holding the ark in the middle of the river. And the waters have been pushed back. And as Israel gazes on, these 12 men, one from each tribe, descend back down the banks of the river, and they approach the Ark of the Covenant being carried by the priest. Then bending down at the feet of the priest, each one picks up a large stone from the riverbed, and they begin the slow walk back up across the plain to Gilgal. And again, we're not exactly sure where that is specifically in terms of how far that was from the river. It's as much as a couple of miles. It's also possible that it's a whole lot closer than that. And then God says to the Lord, to Joshua, here's the reason. Because you can imagine that by this particular moment, not only are these men who have to go back down and pick up the stone going, I already have to carry all the responsibility for my family and all my family possessions. Now you want to go back and pick up a rock too? So they're asking that proverbial why question, at least in their heads, and God gives them the answer. Verse 6, this shall be a sign among you, so that when your children ask later, what do these stones mean? Then you're going to say to them, because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, when it crossed the Jordan, and the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall become a memorial to the sons of Israel forever. God is setting up a historical marker, a reminder for the nation of Israel so that as they traveled in the years to come, and somebody goes, why is there a pile of rocks there? The parent's responsibility then becomes to tell the story. Tell the biblical story. Tell what God has done in this place. It becomes a reminder of God's power, his protection, his provision. In the language, the word cut off, karath, it's the same word that's used when God makes a covenant. God cuts a covenant. It's the exact same word. So when God says the Jordan River was cut off, he's reminding them, I'm making a covenant with you by this demonstration of parting the waters. I'm cutting them off. I'm covenanting with you. And I'm fulfilling the Abrahamic covenant by bringing you into the promised land. And there is a chiasm in this structure of verses 6 and 7. And I put it in your notes. If you're looking at your notes, you'll notice there's an omission in the notes. It's the second week in a row my computer has made a mistake. And so I'm obviously going to have to bring that thing in for maintenance because it can't seem to get things right. But here's what's missing. It's the second letter C. Because the chiastic structure goes A and then indents to B and then indents to C and indents to D. And then D starts again and D and C and B and A. And the second C is missing. And it should read, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. That should be what the second C is. And you can see the parallelism and the connection. So that the first A is to serve as a sign and the last A is a memorial. So he's bringing these two things together. And he sets up a structure in the language so that it explains the significance of the memorial. It's a sign that educates future generations about their heritage and, more importantly, about their God. Do you know that piling up stones is a common practice in the Near East? And it's a common practice for the nation of Israel. What did Noah do after the flood? Now, the text says he built an altar. Yeah, what did he do? He piled up a bunch of stones as a reminder of what God had done as a place to celebrate God's faithfulness in providing for he and his family. What did Abraham do? Set up a pile of stones. Jacob set up a pile of stones. Moses set up a pile of stones. And again, the text says they're altars, and they are, because they're places to worship God. But they're a pile of stones. They're memorials. They're places to remember what God has done that lead to action, in many cases, of worship and praise to God for his faithfulness. These simple piles of common stones are reminders of God's covenant promises, protection, and provision for his people. Verses 8 and 9 tell us how the pile was made. The sons of Israel did as Joshua commanded. They took up the 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, just as the Lord spoke to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. They carried them over with them to the lodging place, and they put them down there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the feet of the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing, and they are there to this day. Not today, although they might be somewhere there today, but it's the author of the book writing saying they're there the day in which the book was written. They were still there for the nation of Israel. Apparently, there were two piles of stones, if you read the text carefully. There's the 12 large stones that each one of the leaders of the nation, of the tribes of the nation, took out of the river and piled up near Gilgal. But then it appears that Joshua went back down into the riverbed himself and set up a pile of stones at the feet of the priest. Now, there are a number of scholars who suggest that there weren't two piles, that there were only one. And verse 9 is referencing that Joshua oversaw the setting up of the 12 stones, and he wasn't actually back in the river setting up a whole set of stones himself. And linguistic reasons are given and suggest that a verb is implied so that verse 9 would read, Joshua set up the stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan River. Well, not being a linguistic or Hebrew scholar, I'm going with two piles. And I think the text is pretty clear. Where is Joshua stated geographically when he sets up his pile? At the feet of the priests. Where are the priests? Well, and you know, the priests are not out of the river until verse 16. So either the whole thing is out of whack in terms of a timeline, or Joshua, out of a spontaneous act of worship, out of incredible praise and gratitude to God, I think he runs back down into the river and bows down at the feet of the priest and sets up a pile of stones. Just to say, God, thank you for your incredible grace and provision in bringing us to this place. The priests then, verse 10, who carried the ark, were standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything was completed that the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And the people hurried and crossed. I always like that little phrase because I tend to think that as the families crossed, nobody stopped and went. Man, the waters were parted, the ground was dry. Let's get across here as fast as we can.
Like a hot potato.
Like a hot potato. Just in case, you know, those waters could come crashing back. So they hurried and crossed. Verses 12 and 13 are really interesting because they give a partial list, but a specific emphasis. Notice the emphasis. The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over, and here's the phrase, in battle array before the sons of Israel, just as Moses had spoken to them. About 40,000 equipped for war crossed for battle before the Lord to the desert plains of Jericho. Reuben and Gad and the half of the tribe of Manasseh were in battle array. They were crossing the Jordan for one purpose and one purpose only: to engage the enemy in physical warfare. And they were simply fulfilling the promise that they had made to Moses, that Joshua had reminded them of in chapter 1. And here's the physical representation, the act of doing what they said they were going to do. For the nation of Israel, crossing the Jordan River guaranteed warfare. That's one of the reasons they didn't want to go in the first place, right? There were giants there. There were problems there. Yes, it's a beautiful land and it's flowing with milk and honey and it's just incredible, but we're not going because the enemies are bigger than us and we don't want to fight the battles. God reminds us through this event here in Joshua chapter 4 that for the nation of Israel to cross the Jordan River guaranteed physical warfare. What was true for Israel is true for the believer today. Not physical warfare, but when you and I come to faith in Jesus Christ, we are guaranteed spiritual warfare. It's inevitable. Because we've been translated out of the kingdom of darkness, we've been placed into the kingdom of light, and the leader of the kingdom of darkness doesn't like that. And so we are reminded throughout the New Testament that as believers in Jesus Christ, spiritual warfare is inevitable. Now, for the nation of Israel, their foes were the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and all the otherites. But can I suggest to you that they're less of a daunting foe than the demonic forces of darkness? And we ought to be as prepared and as recognized as inevitable our warfare, even more so than theirs. So that Peter says, be alert. Stay alert. Paul reminds us, put on the full armor of God because the battle rages. Our foe is crafty, he's cunning, he's powerful, he's deceitful. And my purpose this morning is not to go down a long path of spiritual warfare and what it means for the believer, but simply a reminder that a lot of what happens in our lives, individually and in the church, is the result of spiritual conflict. And we often overlook that and forget it. It's not at the top of our radar screen. And the little blips get missed. I wonder sometimes if, as believers, early in our life, if someone had sat down with us and discipled us and said, let me remind you, warfare is inevitable. Be prepared. Stay alert. Remember, just like God had promised to the nation of Israel, I'm going to drive them out. It's going to require your participation, but I'm going to lead. If you follow me, the enemy will be defeated. Remember this, Jesus already defeated Satan. The battle's already been won. But our participation of faithfulness in following him and recognizing who the enemy is and putting on the armor is required to experience the victory that Jesus has already won. Verse 14 fulfills the promise of chapter 3 and verse 7. It literally closes the account of the crossing. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel so that they revered him just as they had revered Moses all the days of his life. And you remember chapter 3 and verse 7, the Lord said to Joshua, this day I'll begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that just as I've been with Moses, I'll be with you. And the reality and the experience of that becomes real for Joshua in verse 14 of chapter 4. Beginning in verse 19, the stones of remembrance and the Passover are connected. Excuse me, I should go back and say that the Lord said to Joshua, command the priests finally to get out of the river. You don't need to stay there anymore. Come on up and join us. And they carry the Ark of the Covenant up from the middle of the Jordan. The soles of the priests of the feet were lifted up to the dry ground. And the moment that their feet hit the dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and they reached flood stage. But just as you find in Joshua, geographical places are mentioned, you also find that historical places are mentioned. Notice what it says. Now the people came up from Jordan on the 10th of the first month and camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. Now when God puts dates in Scripture, it's not because he needed to fill up space. And if we don't know the historical background, we'll skip over that because the 10th of the first month means nothing. Unless we remember the Exodus. Because while the nation of Israel was in Egypt, the 10th of the first month was the day that they chose the Passover lamb that was to be sacrificed on the 14th day of the first month. Picture this for the nation who might be reflecting, having just crossed the Jordan River in flood stage on dry ground, be reminded of the Red Sea crossing of the nation of Israel out of Egypt and going, God did it again. And right before we left Egypt, we selected a lamb that was sacrificed. God prepared the lamb for sacrifice. God is now on the same day, 40 years later, preparing the nation of Israel to fulfill the covenant that he made to them. The 10th of the first month is when they cross, because they're about to enter the conflict and fulfill the covenant that God has promised to them. The 12 stones taken up out of the Jordan are set up as a memorial on this day, a reminder. And what you discover that the reminder is more than just a historical reminder for parents to tell their kids. There's a threefold effect that this reminder is to have as it's established for the nation of Israel. One, it is an opportunity for parents to discuss theology. The 12 stones which had taken up from the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And he said to the sons of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall inform your children, saying, Israel crossed this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed. just as the Lord your God had done to the Red Sea when he dried up before us until we had crossed. So one generation is passing theological truth on to the other generation, and it's done because there's a pile of stones. I mean, just use your sanctified imagination and picture a dozen years later. A father is taking his family down to see his uncle. You know, and along the way, they cross this pile of stones. And one of the kids says, "Why are they there?" And the father says, "Let me tell you. Those stones were set up when we crossed the Jordan River. I know because I was there. I saw it. God has provided for us in ways that were miraculous. God has done amazing things for us, and God wants to continue to do amazing things for us, and he can be trusted. And just like I am following him, you need to follow him because of who he is." So it's a great opportunity for parents to give theology to their children. But there's a second purpose of these pile of stones. Verse 24, the first part of the verse. "That all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty." Can I suggest to you that the second purpose is evangelism? It's to reveal God's character. And it's to reveal God's character to the pagan nations, to those who weren't part of the covenant promise. And if you remember when Rocky took us through the story of Rahab, what was her statements to the spies? "We know that your God is the God, the only true God, because he is mighty and he has done great things for you." The purpose of the stones was to provide a reminder to the pagan nations that God had provided for the nation of Israel because he is a mighty God. It's a memorial to the testimony of God's character. And there's a third purpose. It's for parents and children. It's for evangelism. And thirdly, it's for motivation. Look at the end of verse 24. "So that you," God's people, "may fear the Lord your God forever." These stones were to be a reminder to the nation of Israel so that they would give wholehearted loyalty to God, that they would walk in obedience to him, to fear him in the sense of wanting to obey simply because of who he is and what he's done. As I've stated before, and I'll state it again because we need to be reminded about what we're remembering. It's not just calling for a pleasant memory. I remember when the Cowboys won their last Super Bowl. those many years ago. But it doesn't affect me. It doesn't change my behavior. When the Bible speaks of remembering, it's designed to produce an action. For God to remember Israel is for God to act on their behalf. Of course, just the opposite is true. For God not to remember our sins means he doesn't treat us as sinners. He treats us as saints. For Israel to remember God means they act on God's behalf. So as they look at the stones of remembrance and realize that they did not cross the Jordan at flood stage on their own ability, but did so by God's power and provision, they would see the need and value of obedience to him. To remember God, for them to remember God, meant that they would conduct their lives in obedience to God, their family life, their cultural life, their business life, the warfare that was about to take place. Because a good memory is designed to determine the course of their lives. So God sets up memorial stones. They were not Joshua's idea. They were not the nation's idea. They were God's idea. God commanded them because God knows how important remembering what he has done is to our spiritual health. God also knows that we're prone to forget. And when we forget, we don't act on his behalf, but we act on our own behalf, and we're likely then to act in unbelief, relying on our own resources. By the way, that's why God has given us communion. What's the purpose of communion? What is it? What do we repeat every time we take communion? Remember me. Remember what I've accomplished on your behalf. And in light of what I've accomplished, who you are, and therefore what your responsibility is to follow. Remember me. Why do you think God decided that baptism was a good idea? You know, we all should get wet every once in a while. Or because people can't agree on modes of baptism, we should all have baptism so we can argue over which one's better. Now, baptism is designed to be a memorial, a reminder of my commitment to follow Christ. I still have my certificate from First Baptist Church of Greenport, New York, when I was baptized. And it's a reminder of my commitment to follow Christ. I'm convinced that God gave us the written word as a memorial as well, because it reminds us of who God is, what God has accomplished, what he desires from us, and the things that are going to happen in the future. But in conclusion this morning, let me, yes, sir?
Just an observation. Yes. It's interesting to me that people that travel through the wilderness up in the country area of any mountainous area, they mark the trail with piles of rocks.
Yeah.
And it's not just to say, I've been here, to say, this is the way to go.
Good point. That's a great illustration. Yes, Bob.
It's interesting to speculate why we don't know where the stones were. The Noah Ark, really where Christ was buried. Because they would become idols.
Yep, they would.
And we have the full canon of the scriptures, as you just pointed out. Yeah. That's our memorial and the ordinances that God
has given us. Amen. And I want to suggest that as part of our spiritual journey, that it's a helpful practice to set up your own pile of stones. When God does something significant in your life, set up a memorial. Now, that could be a literal pile of stones. but it could be photographs. It could be ornaments. It could be mementos. It could be paintings. It could be plantings of trees or flowers. When we were in Pennsylvania, the first 10 years that we were there, one of my friends who was a landscape architect and had his own business would give us a bald Christmas tree, a live Christmas tree at Christmas, and we'd bring it into the house and put the decorations on it. And once Christmas was over and we took the decorations down, we'd take that tree and we'd plant it in the backyard. Some of those trees died. Those were hard years. But they were literal reminders of God's faithfulness and where he had brought us and why we were there. Because I could look out the back door all year long and see those Christmas trees and be reminded of God's faithfulness to us. When you travel, it's very common for us to take photographs. You know, so when I was in Israel, I took hundreds of photographs. Occasionally, I will look at those photographs, and they do remind me of the trip. But you know what else they remind me of? The people I were with and the things that we did, and they often prompt me to not only give thanks but to pray for that person. Or, oh yeah, I haven't seen them in a while. I'm going to jot them a note. Because they're simple reminders. And I've mentioned this before, but in my house on the wall, I have a picture of a lion that was taken as a photograph and given to us. That's my Aslan. That's my reminder that Jesus is the Lion of Judah. That encourages me to be courageous and confident because of who he is. What are your stones of remembrance? What memorials do you have? Because if you don't have them, you're going to end up with bacon and eggs instead of ice cream. And we'd all rather have ice cream.